United States has increased airstrikes in the support of Afghan forces over the last several days.
As they exit, U.S. forces continue airstrikes in Afghanistan. This is Tuesday, July 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, spectators find a way to watch an Olympic competition in person. Australia warns that more anti-lockdown protests will not be tolerated. Most epidemics can be contained. We'll explore America's last frontier. And deadly flooding continues in at least one area of China. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The United States will continue to carry out airstrikes to support Afghan forces facing attack from the insurgent Taliban, a regional U.S. commander said on Sunday, as U.S. and other international forces have drawn down troops in Afghanistan. Reuters reporter Jason Albano reports.
The U.S. may be withdrawing its troops from Afghanistan, but on Sunday, it said it would continue to carry out airstrikes to support Afghan forces facing attacks from the Taliban. U.S. Marine General Kenneth McKenzie spoke at a news conference in the capital, Kabul.
The United States has increased airstrikes in the support of Afghan forces over the last several days, and we're prepared to continue this heightened level of support in the coming weeks if the Taliban continue their attacks.
The Taliban has ramped up its offensive in recent weeks and gained more ground in both cities and rural districts. The UN on Monday reported that nearly 2,400 Afghan civilians were killed or injured in May and June. It's the highest for those 2 months since records started in 2009. All this comes after U.S. President Joe Biden said in April, U.S. troops will be completely withdrawn by September. That will put an end to 2 decades of foreign military presence there. McKenzie did not say whether U.S. forces would continue airstrikes after the end of their military mission on August 31st. He did, however, say that a Taliban victory was not inevitable.
It's going to be hard days ahead, but there's a path that could lead us to a political solution to this war.
Almost a year of peace talks between Afghanistan's government and the Taliban have had little effect on the war. And after a lull over a Muslim holiday this week, McKenzie said there would likely be a rise in violence.
Jason Albano reporting. As you heard in Jason's report, a UN report issued Monday said more women and children were killed and wounded in Afghanistan in the first half of 2021 than in the first 6 months of any year since the United Nations began systematically keeping count in 2009. Afghanistan saw a 47% increase in the number of all civilians killed and wounded in violence across the country in the first 6 months of the year compared to the same period a year ago, according to the report. The report blamed anti-government forces for 64% of all civilian casualties, with 39% by the Taliban, nearly 9% by the Islamic State group, and 16% undetermined. Fiona Fraser, human rights chief for UNAMA, the UN assistance mission in Afghanistan, said Sunday that women and children made up almost half of the civilian casualties.
The most egregious attack taking place on the 8th of May, the school near the school in Kabul, where over 300 civilians became casualties of 3 IEDs, many of whom were schoolgirls who were leaving to go home that day.
The report found a particularly sharp increase in killings and injuries in May when American and NATO troops began to withdraw from Afghanistan, triggering a new Taliban offensive. Fraser said the UN report issues a warning.
We really need to see a de-escalation in the violence. Otherwise, in accordance with the current projections that we have documented, we could see in Afghanistan record levels of civilians killed and injured for the entire year of 2021.
However, the Taliban insists there will not be peace in Afghanistan until there is a new negotiated government in Kabul and President Ashraf Ghani is removed. You can find out more about this story at voanews.com and our many digital platforms. These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. Southeast Asia's COVID-19 cases hit new highs. Malaysian doctors protest. A South Korean study shows mixing an AstraZeneca and Pfizer shot boosts COVID antibody levels. During a rare visit, China's Xi urges people in Tibet to follow the party. Pakistan PM Khan's ruling party wins a regional election in Kashmir. Torrential rains kill over 160 in India. Dozens are trapped in landslides. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Tokyo 2020 organizers have asked fans to stop watching from the roadside at events like cycling and triathlon. The appeal was made after hundreds of fans lined the streets Monday to watch the men's triathlon. Flora Bradley Watson reports.
Olympic fans defied a ban on spectators at the Games on Monday as they tried to get a glimpse of the men's triathlon on day three of Tokyo 2020. Hundreds of people lined the route of the course, which saw Norway's Christian Blumenfelt win gold. Fans said they did not want to miss a chance to see the athletes compete.
We're outdoors, so it won't get overcrowded. I think the risk of getting infected is extremely low, almost equal to zero. It's an event only held once every 4 years, and the Tokyo Games are very special, so I can't miss this chance. That's why I came here.
But the crowd prompted the Olympic Organising Committee to issue a direct plea for people to stay at home to watch the Games.
Of course, it breaks everyone's heart that there are no spectators, but health and safety are number one priorities.
Tokyo remains under a state of emergency due to the pandemic. On Monday, there were 16 new reported cases related to the Games, bringing the total number this month to 148. In a boost for the host nation, Japan has won 6 gold medals so far, including a skateboarding double with Yuto Horigomi coming out top in the men's street event and Mamji Nishiya winning the women's. At 13, Nishiya is Japan's youngest ever gold medal winner.
Reuters reporter Flora Bradley Watson. Members of the Burmese community in Tokyo gathered in front of the national stadium to protest and bring attention to the coup in Myanmar. The group said athletes from Myanmar participating in the Tokyo Olympic Games were not representative of the whole country. Lee Lai Win, a Burmese nurse living in Japan, said how could the Olympics start in the spirit of peace and equality and yet ignore what is happening in Myanmar? Fellow protester Tan Saw Tet said he wanted to hear from the athletes themselves and whom they represented. If they accept the Myanmar military, I'm against them, he said. The military took power in Myanmar in February after ousting Aung San Suu Kyi, elected government, and arrested her and other top officials in her government. The party was about to begin a second 5-year term in office after a landslide election victory last November. You're listening to VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, a strong, shallow, underwater earthquake shook central Indonesia Monday, but no serious damage was immediately reported and no tsunami warning was issued. The magnitude 6.2 quake was centered near a town in central Sulawesi province. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks so much for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Police in Australia have warned that more anti-lockdown protests will not be tolerated after thousands of people defied COVID-19 public health orders in Sydney Saturday. Health officials fear the illegal demonstration could become a super spreader event as an outbreak of the Delta variant in Sydney gets worse. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The hunt for the ringleaders of Saturday's anti-lockdown demonstrations in Sydney is continuing. Dozens have been charged after confrontations with the police and riot officers. Some protesters brought their children and few were wearing masks. Police warn they will arrest people over unlawful activity. Health officials said the protest Saturday in 3 Australian cities, including Melbourne and Brisbane, would put lives at risk. Authorities have said that up to 3,500 people took part in the rally in Sydney. After the protest, New South Wales Police Commissioner Mick Fuller said any repeat of the unrest would be met with a significant show of force.
There's some information on the internet at the moment about a potential protest this Saturday. Can I just put this warning out now to everyone that we will be taking the ground very early? You will be arrested. The Premier has spoken about that behaviour and it won't be tolerated again.
About 14 million Australians are under strict lockdown restrictions in three states as cases surge in the country. But the restrictions in South Australia will end on Tuesday, and a decision on Victoria's lockdown is expected in the next 24 hours. However, there are fears that stay-at-home orders that have been in place for more than a month in Sydney and three surrounding regions will again be extended. New South Wales officials announced 145 new coronavirus cases Monday. Australia has recorded 33,000 COVID-19 infections and 918 deaths since the pandemic began. Efforts are underway to boost low rates of vaccinations. Only about 16% of Australians are fully inoculated. There has been widespread hesitancy in the community about Australia's main vaccine, AstraZeneca, after it was linked to a very small number of blood clots. However, the company that makes the AstraZeneca vaccine has denied the link, saying there's no evidence of an increased risk of blood clots in connection with the vaccine. Supplies of the Pfizer vaccine have also been limited. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Since April, Thailand's third wave of COVID-19 has brought hundreds of thousands of new infections, leading the government to impose strict lockdowns across heavily hit provinces, including Bangkok. Public spaces were closed Friday as part of a wider effort to reduce the spread of the virus, but Sunday saw more than 15,000 new cases of COVID-19 and more than 100 deaths, the highest since the pandemic began, according to local media reports. To date, only about 5% of that country's population of almost 70 million people has been fully vaccinated against the virus.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Support for Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga slid 9 points to 34%, its lowest since he took office, that according to a survey on Monday, as worries about COVID-19 clouded his hopes that the Tokyo Olympics would boost his ratings ahead of an election this year. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The number of known deaths from COVID-19 has passed 4 million, according to Johns Hopkins University, which is tracking both cases and deaths. In the past 100 years, there have been flu and cholera epidemics, the AIDS epidemic, and multiple other diseases around the world. VOA's Carol Pearson says the latest research shows many epidemics either don't have to happen or can be contained.
As some countries prepare for yet another wave of the coronavirus, doctors in countries with a surplus of vaccines are begging people to get vaccinated.
I'm Dr. Michael Boulding. I've been working our COVID unit for the last 16 months. I get asked on a daily basis now what our COVID unit looks like.
Boulding says he is now seeing very sick, unvaccinated patients in their 20s and 30s.
With no comorbid conditions, ending up on ventilators, BiPAP, high flow oxygen, and extremely sick, sicker than at any time during this pandemic.
With a vaccine, severe illness and death from COVID-19 can be avoided. Amanda McClelland works to prevent epidemics at an organization called Resolve to Save Lives.
We're calling for a global goal of 717, 7 days to detect an outbreak, 1 day to notify an outbreak, and 7 days to mount an effective response.
VOA interviewed Amanda McClelland at a summit on disease prevention and control. She says it's possible to prevent epidemics and cites Uganda as an example. Uganda stopped a recent Ebola outbreak at its border with the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Uganda responded to the risk and mobilized their communities, mobilized their health systems to strengthen surveillance along the border, and was able to detect Ebola cases and care for those patients effectively, and they didn't have an Ebola outbreak.
In fact, a study released in April by Resolve to Save Lives, that's called Epidemics That Didn't Happen, included multiple examples of situations where countries avoided or stopped epidemics. Here's another example. In 2014, Nigeria stopped an Ebola outbreak, and in 2016, Brazil prevented a yellow fever epidemic from taking hold. In both cases, health officials implemented coordinated response activities, effective communication, and dedicated leadership. McClellan says the key is good leadership and building trust at the community level.
You can't just come when something bad happens. You have to be there all of the time. You have to meet the communities where they are and address their everyday health needs, and that builds trust.
McClelland says trust, good journalism, and a strong civil society help communities push back against disinformation and politicizing diseases, vaccines, and treatments. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, South Korea said on Monday it had been informed by Moderna of an unspecified production issue involving its COVID-19 vaccine as the country expands its inoculation campaign for people aged 55 to 59 amid a fourth wave of infection. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Alaska is the northernmost part of the United States, and it is big, big in landmass and big in military power. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb crisscrossed Alaska by helicopter Saturday with Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin to learn more about the last frontier state's strategic importance.
There's a lot of wild, open space between military installations in Alaska. Grizzly bears prowl nearby. And the weather is wild, too. In the winters, it can get down to around minus 45 degrees Celsius. So why would the U.S. place so many of its troops and defenses in such a harsh environment? The answer, according to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, is geography.
We are an Indo-Pacific nation, and we are an Arctic nation. And here in Alaska, those two critical regions intersect.
Alaska is bordered by the Pacific Ocean and the Arctic Ocean. Eielson Air Force Base, in the heart of Alaska, is about 160 kilometers from the Arctic Circle. There, Austin says, the U.S. has beefed up defenses and expanded training in an effort to increase its competitive edge over near-peer adversaries Russia and China.
You've seen us increase our capability up here recently with the arrival of additional F-35s. We're in the process of building out the capabilities to support that effort.
Which is especially useful since fifth-generation F-35 fighter jets based at Alsen can reach anywhere in the northern hemisphere. Fly over the North Pacific, you're in Asia. Want to get to Europe? Just hop across the Arctic. Need to practice military skills at home? There's a 200,000 square kilometer training range here.
Unless you've served here, people don't fully understand how strategically important our state is.
Alaskan Senator Dan Sullivan is a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He says the Pentagon is right to focus on high-end competitors, but he's worried the U.S. may not be keeping up.
China's been increasing its defense spending by 10% a year. Right, and they're going to keep doing that. We, you know, second term of the Obama administration cut defense spending by 25%. Trump, we got back on it. It's going down again. So, absolutely, I'm concerned, and so are our most members of the Armed Services Committee. Doesn't matter what party.
Sullivan says he wants to see a defense budget that grows 3 to 5% annually to keep pace with Chinese military investments. And he points to bases spread across America's last frontier state as a testament to how defense dollars can go a long way from Washington. Carla Babb, VOA News, Eielson Air Force Base, Alaska.
Myanmar's economy is forecast to shrink by 18% as it grapples with the coronavirus and the political turmoil unleashed by a coup, according to the World Bank. The contracting economy threatens millions with poverty, joblessness, and hunger. A decade ago, the Southeast Asian nation was seen as a promising frontier market. Its military began to slacken its grip. The economy opened up to the outside world for the first time in decades, and Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party was democratically elected. However, observers believe a February 1st coup following a second resounding election victory for Suu Kyi's party has turned back the clock, wiping out the fragile gains. The February coup, together with the most recent third wave of the pandemic, which rapidly worsened in June and July, has had significant economic impacts, much larger than those observed after the earlier surge in COVID-19 cases that began in September of last year, according to the World Bank's Myanmar Economic Monitor. We continue on VOA Asia. More heavy rain is expected in central China's flood-ravaged Henan province, where the death toll has risen to around 70. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has more.
Forecasters say cities already hard hit now face more heavy downpours, complicating rescue efforts and attempts to deliver water and food. Teams are working hard, plugging gaps in dikes, while fresh storms will put more pressure on basins used to divert and hold floodwaters. Further help is coming from the military, with helicopters used to bring drinking water, medicine, food and other relief items to around 20,000 people in inaccessible areas. The flooding that began July 17 has affected almost 13 million people and collapsed nearly 9,000 homes. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
This coming week could be make or break for a bipartisan plan to fix America's languishing infrastructure. Michelle Quinn has more.
The effort to upgrade America's roads, bridges, and broadband networks may get a boost this week if a $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure agreement advances. The Senate could vote to open debate, but details are still being worked out by a group of Republican and Democratic senators on issues that include public transit spending. Ohio Senator Rob Portman, the lead Republican negotiator of the bipartisan group, said the package represents a rare moment to show that the two political parties can compromise to get things done. He spoke to ABC this week.
So it's the right thing to do for the country, most importantly, but it's also something that has been the subject of a bipartisan consensus finding process, which we ought to do more of in this town.
Once it is ready, the bipartisan package will face a challenge for passage. With 60 votes needed, the deal's success relies on some Republican senators joining in the evenly divided Senate. Proponents can't afford to lose a single vote, but some want the smaller bipartisan package to be tied to a separate $3.5 trillion initiative that focuses on human infrastructure. That includes childcare, education, and climate change provisions. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, said she will bring the bipartisan infrastructure measure to the House floor only when the Senate passes that bigger package. The Senate can do that, she said, through a process known as reconciliation, a way to enact legislation on taxes, spending, and other financial measures with only a simple majority required in that chamber. She spoke on ABC this week.
The president has said that he wants to have a bipartisan bill, and we all do. But that is not the limitation of the vision of the president. He wants to build back better. He wants to do so in a way that, again, involves many more people in the prosperity of our country.
The health of America's infrastructure has long been ranked behind those of other developed nations. The dueling packages are a test for elected leaders, including President Joe Biden, a Democrat, over whether the two parties can come together to get things done. Both chambers have a short window to do so before recessing in August. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thank you to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Chris Cascao, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Please try to stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.